I'm Matthew Woods, host of Leading Out of the Woods, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you are listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of Transparency in Teaching, the news edition. As the school year has gotten into full swing, I might be able to track down Jen and convince her to help me get another episode out, but for now, it's just me again. This week, I'm talking about the continuing blah, blah, blah over pronouns and gender and all things that make some people all squirmy and uncomfortable. Pretty much what always happens when what's quote-unquote normal experiences growing pains. Also, I'll share the growing problem of absenteeism and its causes and what schools need to do to help kids find their way back into their chairs. Maybe having to be in chairs all the time is part of the problem? Oh, and you should really stop by transparencyandteaching.com and check out our brand new, shiny, fancy website. Well, it's not quite finished yet, so you can keep on checking it to see our progress. You can find all our episodes there and our blog posts. Look us up on Instagram at transparency_in_teaching. And you can leave your comments and ideas for episodes directly to me on LinkedIn and X. Do I still have to say formerly Twitter? Anyways, you can find me there at L2TCHR. L2TCHR. I'll look forward to hearing from you. Hey, you know, we've also started a Facebook group where members can share tips and get help and support. So please join the conversation there. I'm hoping to grow the group so that it can eventually function as a mastermind group for new and struggling teachers to get help. We need to have our hands on each other's backs more than ever now. Anyway, stay tuned for these stories and my opinions right after this. Okay, let's get into our first story about parents' rights and all things gender. The California Attorney General, Rob Bonta, filed a suit to block a school district's new policy, which requires principals, teachers, or counselors to notify parents when their students change their gender identity or pronouns. This is the new policy of the 26,000-student Chino Valley Unified School District, just east of Los Angeles, for those of you unfamiliar with Southern California. The lawsuit claims that this policy violates California's constitutional guarantee of equal protection, privacy, and the fundamental right to an education. Bonta's lawsuit states, quote, "On July 20th, 2023, the district school board adopted policy 5020.1 and its forced disclosure provisions. The policy mandates that Chino Valley Unified School District employees out transgender and gender nonconforming students to their parents or guardians, regardless of the student's wishes, whenever the student asks to be identified or treated as a gender other than the student's biological sex or gender listed on the student's birth certificate or any other official records. Policy 5020.1 also requires forced disclosure whenever a student requests to use a name different than their legal name or to use pronouns that do not align with the student's biological sex or gender listed on the student's birth certificate or other official records. And policy 5020.1 requires staff members to notify parents or guardians whenever the student requests access to sex-segregated school programs and activities, including asking to join a sports team or use a different bathroom. During a training conducted for one school over the summer in this district, the principal explained how this process would work. The principal would call the child out of class inform the student of what was going to happen and attempt to persuade the student to walk it back, you know, to disclaim their gender identity before the meeting with the parents. That's what the suit says. During the same training, the suit says, the principal informed teachers that if they did not report a student's name, gender, or bathroom request to the school administration, it would become an HR issue. Bonta is seeking an injunction to stop the implementation of this new district provision. There have already been several students outed against their wishes with various negative outcomes. This is nothing new. Many districts and states are working to adopt or, you know, they have adopted similar provisions. They're throwing teachers and the administration into an impossible choice. You know, are we supposed to out a student and expose them to possible harm? Or do we suffer the consequences of discipline or removal from our jobs for not doing so? In response to this, a week later, a California judge issued a restraining order under a, quote, abundance of caution. San Bernardino Superior Court Judge Thomas Garza stated concern over how to safeguard these students who identify as LGBTQ and how to keep from singling out a class of protected individuals differently than the rest of the students. Chino Valley School District officials argued that, quote, the parent notification policy does protect transgender students and takes their safety extremely seriously. End quote. The district's spokesperson, he pointed out that the policy doesn't endanger students because school personnel are already required to notify Child Protective Services or law enforcement because we are mandated reporters. And we're supposed to contact these people if we believe the student is in danger or if they've been abused or injured or neglected due to their parent or their guardian knowing their preferred gender identity. This is all based on the idea of parents' rights. Parents should have the right to know what their child is doing and saying in school. I totally get that. I too would want to know if my child was suddenly, I don't know, exhibiting some new behaviors. Teachers, we contact parents all the time to explain a student's behavior that we're concerned about. But this is different because when a student shares something that they specifically tell a teacher or school personnel in confidence not to tell their parents because they fear retribution, there's a reason for that. Forcing a teacher to out a kid or else can put a teacher in a precarious position, you know, like lose your job or potentially set a child up for harm. Not only that, but the child now is aware of the fact that by just reporting this, by suggesting they may be afraid, this is putting their own family now in jeopardy. Because as mandatory reporters, we have to report any suspicion or any declaration or fear that a child says about abuse to the authorities, or we risk losing our credentials. After seeing what happened in Chino Valley School District, Orange Unified School District, who also wants to add these kind of policies to their schools, they slightly amended and passed their own forced outing policy. Here's what they did to change it. Instead of a teacher reporting to a parent, Orange's policy will refer a student or refer the student to a school counselor or a psychologist. I don't know why, to determine if there might be something psychologically wrong with the child. Anyways, if that student identifies with a gender that does not align with the gender they're assigned at birth, the school principal would then notify the student's parents within 5 days, unless there is a reason to believe that doing so would harm the student, or if the student is 12 years of age and older and doesn't consent to the disclosure. Huh, whew. Orange County, junior high school and high school teachers, you dodged that bullet. Districts nationwide are adopting these types of policies. If it hasn't come to your school yet, stay tuned. I hated when kids used to play the what if game with me at school, you know, coming up with those nonstop scenarios when we're talking about some topic, but But this topic of mandatory outings definitely needs some deep what-ifing. Like, what if the child expresses to the administration that they would be endangered by physical or mental abuse? Should the school personnel notify their parents? Because school personnel are mandated reporters, do they now have to report the parents to authorities as well? And if they do out the student to the parent and harm comes to the child because of this outing, is the administration now responsible for any injuries to the child? How can a teacher possibly know if the child is telling the truth about their parents? Kids stretch the truth all the time. But not believing them could put the student and the teacher in a terrible situation. This all sounds like a complex decision and a huge responsibility to put on our already overburdened shoulders. And what if a parent knows that their child is trans? Now, does that parent have to tell the school, hey, my kid is trans, it's okay to call them by their chosen pronouns and preferred name? I mean, can parents request their student use the restroom they identify with and play sports on teams matching their identity? Remember, this is all about a parent's right to do what they feel is best for their child. It has to go both ways. Will the school have to publish a report so teachers know which students are already outed and whether it's okay to use their student's preferred name and pronouns? This could mean like differential treatment for kids whose parents know they're trans versus kids who are afraid to tell their parents. If parents know their child best and they know what's right for them, then all parents, regardless of how their children identify, should have the right to determine how the school treats their particular child. It has to go both ways. Look, in a perfect world, children and parents would have those open lines of communication. You know, parents could accept their child's preferences and have open, honest, accepting discussions with their children. But I understand that there are certain groups whose religious beliefs or personal ideals tell them that identifying with a gender different from their birth is an abomination, an illness that needs to be cured. I know that this ideology resides deep in some parents' hearts, and their response is a desire made out of quote-unquote love or a way to save their child from some ungodly future. There is absolutely no way you're going to convince these parents with these deep-seated beliefs to accept their child's identity. And it is for that reason that some students need a safe place to be themselves. We can hope that perhaps, you know, there'll come a day when the child feels comfortable having this discussion with their parents. Still, I don't feel it's up to the school to make that determination, especially if it can bring harm, mentally or physically, to the student. That's a decision I never want to have to make. This is just a very complex situation on all sides. You know, I don't think that the transgender issue is even something that today's kids think or care much about. It has become something that just is in their world. It's kind of how, like, when I was growing up, anyone with a tattoo was a criminal or wanted to associate with one. And having a tattoo could even keep a person from being hired for some jobs. But now, it's so normal to have a tattoo that you're kind of considered odd if you don't have one. No one cares if you have a tattoo. Well, unless you're an evolving leftover from the 60s. I mean, I don't even really notice people's tattoos anymore. Sorry, guys, I know you paid a lot of money for your body art. But the bottom line is that it is the adults who are making a big deal of this. Most of them are people who grew up in a time when people were required to stay closeted and pretend to be someone they weren't in order to be accepted. It was unheard of for anyone to claim a gender other than what the stuff between their legs signified. It's like if you tell a kid, like, don't look at that, that's the first thing they're going to look at. Maybe if parents just stop pointing fingers at things they don't want their kids to see, the kids would stop looking in the directions their fingers are pointing. I'm positive there will come a time when all this angst will fade and all the trans conversations will become like a tattoo. Some people have them, others don't. So what? In my humble opinion, many of these laws are being passed because of the powers that be and how they know to play on some people's fears and ignorance in order to, you know, politically get themselves ahead. They're politically motivated false flags. They're designed to grab votes and attention away from other pressing, more vital issues. Instead, all this energy, I feel, should be focused on, you know, things like, you know, erasing learning gaps, poverty, getting rid of hunger, ending homelessness. They should focus on recruiting and keeping the best teachers, because we all know that good teachers are the main reason kids excel in school. And we should work on fixing impoverished schools to, you know, ensure students are graduating with the skills and the knowledge that make them successful citizens. That is what will make our society work. A child who wants to call themselves something different hardly makes a ripple in that much more significant agenda. However, allowing students to feel confident, safe, and accepted at school is at the very core of this success. After this break, we'll get on to our second story about getting kids' butts back in their chairs. Welcome back. Chronic absenteeism is on the rise. Now, if you're not sure what chronic absenteeism is exactly, it is most commonly defined as missing 10% or more of the school year for any reason, whether excused or unexcused. So if you do the math on that, 10% of a 184 year is about 3.5 weeks of school. Now, according to last year's California state data, and I'm talking California because, you know, that's where I live, so kind of relevant to me, absentee rates were much higher than before COVID-19. Statistics show that on an average day during the 2022-23 school year, about 10% of K-12 students were absent. Now, nationally, about one quarter of U.S. students qualified as chronically absent. Oh my gosh. Now, the biggest reason they found for this rise, the big reason, are you ready? Drum roll. Simply, students don't feel compelled to go to school every day. Thomas D., a Stanford economist who conducted the most comprehensive study on this issue, found that between the 2018-2019 and the 21-22 school years, the share of students chronically absent grew about 13.5 percentage points, which is about a 91% increase. This implies, sit down, this blew me away when I heard this. This implies that an additional 6.5 million students are now considered chronically absent.
No way! I can't believe this!
The study also determined that the enrollment loss, COVID-19 case rates, and school masking problems, they were not associated with the state-level growth in chronic absenteeism. The results suggested that barriers like declining mental health and academic disengagement are really the reason, the biggest part of the reason, why students choose not to go to school. And districts need to figure out how to respond to that. Now, this is also not surprising, but absenteeism has risen more in states where the schools remain closed for longer during the pandemic. States like California, New Mexico, and Washington, D.C. In fact, California had the highest increases in chronic absenteeism in the country. About 1 million additionally chronically absent California children compared to before the pandemic. There's a super good, there's a lot of really good data that I found if you go and you visit the child welfare and attendance page of the California Department of Education. There's all kinds of links there to sites that provide data on the current state of attendance in California. And I would assume that other states probably have similar sites. In any case, one of these resources is called DataQuest. And it provided these facts, which helps really paint a picture of the scale of chronic absence and the populations that these absences most affect. So here's some numbers for you. 1 in 10 California students is chronically absent. The highest levels of chronic absences are found in kindergarten, 14%, and in high school, 15%. Not surprisingly, disadvantaged groups suffer the most, such as foster youth, homeless youth, who are, they're like twice as likely as the statewide average to be chronically absent. Our socioeconomically disadvantaged kids and students with disabilities are other groups that are largely affected by this absenteeism. Also, our Native American children, African American and Pacific Islanders also have large numbers of kids who fall into this category. Unsurprisingly though, well, actually it was kind of surprising to me, the largest number of chronically absent students are Latino. There's about 407,000. Next was white, 145,000. And then African American, 69,000. Well, white, African American, Latino, that's just about every single group in California. The COVID-19 pandemic's remote policies are probably, you know, contributed a lot to the idea that learning doesn't have to take place in school. During the shutdown, students, they lost connections with teachers, they lost connections with their friends, and then when school started again, they found it hard to, you know, make those connections again. They lost that ability to interact socially, which is kind of what happens when you're stuck in a room. Most kids didn't leave their room and they had their face behind a phone the whole time. Didn't really get face-to-face interaction for that whole time. I mean, I saw this personally in my own classroom when we came back. And even after the mask mandates were lifted, kids were continuing to wear their masks. And it wasn't because they were afraid of getting sick, but they were embarrassed to actually show their face. They felt disconnected from the school. And, you know, for that reason, they're like, why should I go? They had less reason to return. Let's face it, many students, for them, the social aspect of school is, you know, that's what keeps them coming back to class. They want to hang out with their friends. They want to see their friends. You know, I don't hear many students say, gee, I can't wait to learn more algebra, or I have to get to class on time so I don't miss a word Mr. Smith has to say. You know, they come to be with their friends. And if class is also engaging, wow, that's a bonus. Another site on the child welfare and attendance page is called Attendance Works. They are a nonprofit initiative, and they collaborate with schools and districts and states and communities and organizations who want to address attendance issues, and they kind of help them find ways to do that. Now, Attendance Works classifies the chronic absences into 4 major categories: barriers, negative school experiences, lack of engagement, and faulty beliefs. So to break those down a little bit, barriers are things like chronic illness or being sick a lot, or they don't have health care or mental health, or they've experienced trauma, or just getting to school, walking to and from school is unsafe, or they don't even have reliable transportation to get to school, or maybe they're with a family that moves a lot, or they change schools a lot. And sometimes it has to do with children who are, you know, part of the child welfare and juvenile justice systems. Negative school experiences are things like, you know, struggling academically or socially, bullying, being suspended, negative attitudes of parents due to their own school experiences. Maybe the kid has an undiagnosed disability, or maybe their school just doesn't have accommodations for that disability. And then, of course, there's, you know, actual lack of engagement, you know, such as not having culturally relevant or engaging instruction.
This is boring. Do something fun.
Sorry, teachers. That's kind of on us. Maybe not having a meaningful relationship with the adults in school, or they need stronger ties with their peers, or they have stronger ties with their peers outside of school rather than in school. Maybe the school doesn't feel welcoming, or maybe this is a big one too, especially nowadays, teacher absences or long-term subs. That is horrible. at keeping kids engaged because it just damages any kind of hope for relationship with their teachers. There's also people's misconceptions about being absent. For example, a lot of people feel that, an absence is only an issue if it's not excused. Or that, one or two days missing here or there really doesn't affect learning. Some people think that, an absence here, an absence there is not a problem. And others are like, it's elementary school. It doesn't really matter. When they get into high school, that's when absences count more. Now, based on my years in the classroom, these things kind of seem very obvious reasons that students choose not to come to class. Personally, in my opinion, I think the lack of engaging experiences is the biggest reason kids fake stomach aches. Attendance Works has some actionable policy suggestions as to how to combat and recover from chronic absenteeism. So if your school is experiencing problems with attendance, it might be worth exploring the recommendations. Attendance Works suggests, doing things like ensuring systems are in place to collect and analyze the data on the number and the reasons kids are absent, and then working to build those positive engagement experiences on all levels of school interactions, and making sure that there is equitable and adequate resources available to all students. Getting kids' butts in the classroom door is critical to learning. We know that sending home missed work in no way makes up for missing the actual lesson that was presented. Plus, it's a total pain in a teacher's butt to have to put together packets for kids who are going to be absent for weeks. It is no substitute for the kid being there. I mean, it really doesn't make any sense to teachers who have to do that. Plus, we know half the time when we put those packets together, the kids aren't going to do them anyway. Missing class, makes it harder, regardless of whether the kid makes up the work or not. It makes it harder for the student to belong to the group, and it makes it harder for kids to make friends. And we know that the social aspect of school is super important. And there's nothing worse, I think, for a kid is coming back after being absent and then feeling that you don't have any idea what's going on. You don't know the jokes that are going on in the class. The group work that you didn't get to participate in, now you have to do it on your own. Or the work that you can't complete at home because it requires things that are only in the school. Now that kid has to make arrangements to give up their lunch or come in before or after school to do it. It all just piles on and gets overwhelming. Overwhelming enough to make the student stressed out or have that stomach ache or, a sudden fever manifests. It's just a vicious cycle. I missed school. I didn't do my homework. Now I can't catch up. So I don't want to go to school. So I miss more work. And now I can't catch up even more. And so I don't want to go to, you get it, around and around and around it goes. We have to do a better job as educators and school officials to ensure that we address those four categories that cause students to skip school, barriers, engagement, misconceptions, and negative school experiences. Actually, the more I think about this, the more I believe that absenteeism is actually going to increase. Sorry to say. With the current state of public education under attack and more parents are looking for alternatives, we will have to do a much, 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 much better job of making public schools attractive. We are starting to look more like Kmart and Sears than Amazon. Those businesses, they didn't keep up with the changing market demographics nor revamp their business model. Amazon is the one-stop shop for all your needs. That's what public education will need to be in order to compete with home and online schooling and private schooling and fancy charter schools. If public education doesn't make significant changes in order to get kids interested in being there, it's going to have to close its doors, like Kmart. Look at your school and look at your classroom for that matter. And how are you going to get missing Michael back in his seat? We can't change the future if we can't get the future change makers in the door. What does your school do to combat chronic absenteeism? How do you keep your kids' butts in seats? So that's a wrap for the news and my views. Nice rhyming, huh? If you found this episode entertaining, informative, or helpful, why not share it with others who, you know, might also find it so? You can find our podcast on any of the myriad of podcatchers out there, or if you really want a treat, head over to our website, transparencyandteaching.com, and find all the resources that I used to put together today's episode, as well as like all of our excellent episodes and blog posts with, you know, that must-know information for you new teachers and those of you who are still in the classroom. Thank you very much for staying. You can also find us on Instagram at transparency_in_teaching, or hit me up on LinkedIn and X, I'm not going to say it, as L2TCHR. I always feel like having to say that reference for the formerly known as keeps making me think of the artist formerly known as Prince. In any case. Also, as I said earlier, join our new Facebook group called Transparency and Teaching Stuff and share your thoughts and how-tos and coping strategies there. Or just be a supportive hand on the back of your fellow educators, your would-be educators, and all of those people who are interested in helping our schools help our kids to be the best versions of themselves. So, with all of that, this week's news is now your news to share. And as always, here's hoping all your news is good news. See you next time.